Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Yevamos Daf Yud Zayin. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur at the beginning of the new perek, the second perek of Yevamos. You'll notice the Mishnah at the lower part of Daf Yud Zayin. The Mishnah begins with a reference to one of the arayis, examples of forbidden women that was alluded to or mentioned in the first Mishnah of the Perek. The issue is known as Eshes Achiv Shelo Hoya Ba'olamo, whereby Reuven died, leaving a widow and no children. And at the point that he died, a new brother was born after Reuven's death. In the interim, after Reuven died, he had left a living bracha. So if we want to speak about Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, we can speak about Reuven and Shimon existing together simultaneously in the world. And after Reuven's death, Shimon marries the widow. And after that, Levi is born. Or we can switch around order of events and speak about Reuven dying, Levi being born, and then Shimon marrying the widow. But either way, Levi can be described as an Ochiv Shelo Hoya Ba'olamo. Before we actually get into the Mishnah itself, we glance at the side. We have a topic heading, Ketzad Eishes Ochiv Shelo Hoya Ba'olamo. And we have a little diagram with an indicator that Hamisporim Metuamim Ima Mishnah, the numbers that you see in the diagram correspond to numbers that appear in the Mishnah. So let's take a look first at the diagram just to get a feel of things. This diagram shows you Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. Stage 1, Reuven dies, leaving a brother, Shimon. Upon Reuven's death, he has a wife. We call her Isha Aleph. And stage 2, after Reuven dies, leaving a widow, Levi is born. So Levi is born into a world where he sees the widow of Reuven, a brother that he never knew. He sees a widow unattached. She lost her husband, and she's unattached at this point. And Levi is born. After Levi is born, stage 3, Yibum. You notice that the Isha goes over to Shimon, her brother-in-law, who was in the world simultaneously concurrently with Reuven. There is no problem in that act of Yibum. So Shimon, at this point, when he's miyabim, that Isha Aleph, Shimon also happens to have a wife of his own. We call her Isha Beis. Now, stage 4, after Shimon did Yibum, stage 4, Shimon dies. So the question is, Levi, what is his role with regard to Yibum? So we can say, even before we learn the Mishnah, we've learned this in the first parak, at the beginning of the first parak, when we described Eishes Ochiv Shelo Ba'olamo, Levi was born seeing Reuven's widow unattached. So according to all opinions, Levi cannot marry her. She, Isha Aleph, in our diagram, is what we would call an Eishes Ach. She is Levi's brother's wife, Shelo B'Mokel Mitzvah. So that even when she marries Shimon, the lady is labeled an Eishes Ochiv Shelo Ha'Olamo, and she affects the co-wife, Isha Bays, Shimon's own wife, even though when Shimon dies, he dies leaving no children. Had Shimon not done anything with Isha Aleph, with Reuven's widow, and then died after, of course, Levi was born, leaving only his own wife, so then Levi would have done Yibum with Shimon's wife. However, in the scenario we will be dealing with, we notice that Shimon, before he dies, did do Yibum with Reuven's widow. Shimon has his own wife, Isha Bays. So Isha Bays is called a tsara, a co-wife of a forbidden woman. Isha Aleph is a forbidden woman to Levi. And once again, why? Because Isha Aleph was the wife of a brother that Levi never knew. Eshes, the wife of Achiv Shelo Hayabalama, a brother in whose world they did not coexist. Now, the Mishnah. Notice again, the Mishnah, you will see numbers, and the numbers correspond to the numbers in the diagram. Ketzad Eshes Achiv Shelo Hayabalama. How are we to understand that case? The case of a wife of a brother that was not together with the other brother at the same time. And in learning this, we are also understanding this in the context of the theme of the first Mishnah in the Masechta, that the woman also causes an exemption from Yibum of her co-wife. So what is the case? Shnei Achim. There are two brothers, Reuven and Shimon. Umeis Echad Mehen. Reuven dies. And that number one in the Mishnah corresponds to one on the chart. So with the line that you see on our chart, through Reuven indicates death. Venolad Lohen Ach. And now a new brother is born. The two in the Mishnah is two on the chart. Levi is born. Notice Levi is born after Reuven's death. V'achakach Yibeim Hasheni, es eshes ochiv, and then the second brother we would call Shimon does the act of yibum of marrying his brother's widow. Reuven died leaving no children, and that's the number three on the chart. Reuven's widow goes over to Shimon through an act of yibum. Umeis, that very brother that did the yibum, now he dies. That's stage four. At the point that Shimon dies, he leaves two wives. He leaves the widow of Reuven, which we call Isha Aleph, and he also leaves his own wife, Isha Bays. Harishayna yoytza mishum eshes ochiv shelo hayabalamoy. Isha Aleph, she is exempt, leaves. Yotza means leaves, means she goes away from this family, marries. If she wants to remarry, she marries someone from the Shuk, but not any Yibum. She leaves because of her status of the wife, Eshes, Achiv Shelo Hayabalamo. She was the wife of Reuven, a brother to Levi, that was not in Levi's world. They didn't coexist. Vehashnia, the second woman, Shimon's other wife, his own real wife, she is also exempt from Yibum and Chalitza, Mishum Tzorasa. She's a co-wife of Isha Aleph. After Shimon did Yibum with Isha Aleph, Isha Bays, the second woman, is a co-wife, a tzara of a forbidden woman. Asa bo maimer umes. Imagine, instead of stage three being an act of Yibum, rather Shimon does maimer. Maimer is a term that we have mentioned in the past. It's a rabbinic institution. It is whereby a yavam offers money, not a stranger offering money to a girl, to a woman to betroth her. Here you already have a partial bond, if you will, in the sense that Shimon has a connection, and we'll have to see if that connection has legal status later in the sugya that deals with zika, a very important expression. But this is money that Shimon offers to Reuven's widow. We'll call it, it's a rabbinic type of marital act. Mimer. Shimon offers Reuven's widow money and doesn't yet do Yibum. He doesn't consummate their Yibum marriage and dies. Now, at the point that Shimon dies, he dies leaving his own real wife, the Isha Beis, and this quasi connection to Isha Aleph. It's important when learning this Gemara, as this Sukkiah, as many other places in Shas, to make a distinction between what is Doraisa and what is Derabbanan. There are things that exist on a Torah level and things that exist on a rabbinic level. So on a strictly Torah level, Shimon, at the point he dies, he didn't do Yibum with Ashes, with the Ashes Reuven, with the Isha Aleph. So on a strictly Torah level, even if he gave her money, there's no bond created by his giving money on a strictly Torah level. So on a strictly Torah level, Shimon's own wife, Isha Beis, is subject to Yibum with Levi. After all, Shimon and Levi coexisted. They lived together. They lived in the same world. Shimon dies leaving no children, so Shimon's wife is subject to Yibum. So that's again on a Torah level. But on a rabbinic level, since Shimon offered money to Reuven's wife, he created this partial marriage relationship, which affects Shimon's own wife as well. She becomes we'll call it a rabbinic co-wife of a forbidden woman to Levi. So as such, the Mishnah tells us, Shnia chiletzes velo misyabemes. The rabbis insist that Levi participates in chalitza, freeing Shimon's own wife, but certainly not Yibum. Yibum would be an actual marriage between Levi and Shimon's Isha Beis, the widow, but that we can't allow because of this quasi co-wife status with the Isha Aleph as a result of Shimon's having done Mimer. The Rashi points out as well, even though we might have said it in passing, he points out that the wife of Shimon, Isha Beis, after Shimon did Mimer with Isha Aleph, she's not exempted from Yibum, and that's why we're insisting on Chalitza. She's not exempted from Yibum, because on a Torah level, Shimon is leaving only one true wife. And from that standpoint, she should be subject to Yibum and the laws of Yibum. So on a Torah level, we can't free Shimon's wife automatically on the grounds that she's a co-wife of the forbidden Isha Aleph. And that's why we insist on Chalitza. The Gemara. Omar Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman deals with a language issue in the Mishnah. The Mishnah we have, you'll notice there's a dash underline, and we have a little arrow just to help in the navigation. In the Mishnah, you notice Harishona Yotze Mishum Eishes Achiv Shelo Ba'olamo. And then we say Vashnia. When we learned the Mishnah, we learned the Rishona as referring to the wife of Reuven, the widow of Reuven. And that woman, in effect, becomes a Yavama twice. Yavama meaning she becomes subject, conceptually a Yavama. She had been married to Reuven and was left a widow, no children, with her husband leaving no children. Same thing happened again. Shimon did Yibum, and she was left a widow, not having her husband not having produced children either. So the word Rishona in the Mishnah is a reference to the woman that fell to Yibum twice. Man detoni Rishona lo mishtabesh. One who uses, like in our Mishnah, the term Rishona referring to the lady that fell to Levi twice, so to speak. When we say fell to Levi, it doesn't mean that Levi could have married her, but she became a widow. She was a widow in the presence of Levi on two occasions. We'll say it like that. So one who uses the word Rishona in reference to Isha Aleph, Lo Mishabish, is not making a mistake. Mandatoni Shniot Lo Mishabish. There's another version that we don't have in our Mishnah, but that refers to that lady as the Shnia. That also would not be erroneous, and the Gemara explains how both words, Rishona and Shnia, could be relevant to the widow of Reuven. And here the Gemara explains, Man detoni Rishona lo mishtabesh, the one who uses the version of Rishona in referring to Reuven's widow, is not making a mistake. It's not messed up. My Rishona, what does Rishona mean? Rishona l'nefila. She was the first one to fall, meaning to become available as a Yevama. Uman detoni shnia lo mishtabesh. If you want to refer to the widow of Reuven and call her Shnia, that also would not be a mistake. My Shnia, what does Shnia mean? Shnia l'nisuin. That means she's the second woman. The word Shnia means second. The second woman vis-a-vis Shimon. So what we're suggesting right now, but we're going to change this, is that to refer to the widow of Reuven as Shnia, that would mean that Shimon would have had to have been married already to his own wife, and in doing Yibum, Reuven's widow becomes his second wife. So Shnia would be a reference to, what we'll say, focusing on Shimon and Reuven's widow being Shimon's second marriage, second wife. The Gemara asks, that isn't a total representation of the picture. Mi lo askinon diyibeim v'achar kach kines? Does the Mishnah not include a case where Shimon was a bachelor, was a single man when Reuven died, and Shimon married first in Yibum Reuven's widow, and then married some other woman as his second wife? So that to describe Reuven's widow vis-a-vis Shimon as Shimon's second wife, that's not necessarily the case. That's not exclusive. So, reading that kasha again in the Gemara, Milo askino diibe v'achakach kines, does the Mishnah not include that possibility as well, that first Shimon did Yibum and then married another woman as his second wife? So why would you describe Reuven's widow as the second wife? Elo mai shnia, if you're going to use the term shnia in reference to the widow of Reuven, it means shnia benisuin. It means the second marriage for her. She was married to Reuven, and when Shimon marries her, whenever he marries her, even if he married her without having been married to someone else before, it is her second marriage. So the term Shnia is appropriate to as a reference to Reuven's widow. So just to review what Rav Nachman pointed out, that if you're going to describe Reuven's widow using the term Rishona, that is an apt description. And if you refer to her using calling her Shnia, it's also an apt description. Now the Gemara focuses on the sources for Eshes Achiv Shelohi Balomo. Eshes Achiv Shelohi Balomo Heichok Siva. You'll notice the way we read the Gemara and also the way we mark the Gemara. This is what we'll call a trick, so to speak, to make things easier. This expression is long. It's a Eshes Achiv Shelohi Balomo. But if you isolate the word Eshes means wife of, and then you focus on wife of whom? of an ochiv shelohi bolamo, a brother that wasn't in the world at the same time. We say they did not coexist. So the Gemara is asking, where in the Torah is this prohibited? If we use the examples that we cited at the opening of our shir, from where do we know that Levi cannot marry Reuven's widow, being that Levi was born after Reuven died? Omar Rav Yehuda Marav, Omar Kral, the Pasuk says, Ki yeshvu achim yachdom. This is a Pasuk from the topic of Yibum in the Torah. And it says when the brothers dwell together. And we dashed underline the word yeshvu because the drusha comes from that word. Shehoi solem yeshiva achas bo'ilam. When is there the mitzvah of Yibum? When the two brothers dwelt together in the world. They notice they were alive at the same time. They overlapped at least momentarily. There was some overlap. Prat, this comes to the exclusion. Li'eshes, the exclusion of the case of the wife of Achiv Shelohi Bolamo, a brother that did not coexist. The wife of such a brother, the Reuven's wife, or Reuven's widow, is unfit, is prohibited to Levi, being that Levi did not live at the same time as Reuven. The word Yachdov also appears in the Pasuk, and there are two approaches now. Yachdov, miyuchadim benachla. The word Yachdov is taken to mean miyuchad, the same root meaning unique. The two brothers are miyuchadim, are unique in their both, their being brothers regarding inheritance. In other words, that they can inherit one from the other. Rashi says, "Horuim lirash ze eze." Prat, to the exclusion of liochiv min ha'em, if there are two brothers that have a common mother, not a common father, so the laws of inheritance do not provide for that type of half brother inheriting his deceased brother. However, if they are half brothers sharing a common father, and one of them dies, so the brother is in the line of inheritance as per the laws of inheritance in the Torah, which are expounded upon extensively in Maseches Bava Basra, particularly in the 8th chapter of Bava Basra, Perek Yesh Nochlin. Rava Omar. Rava is a second approach, and we should have noted on the side of our Gemara that the topic we're dealing with is Mekoros Sheyibum Hu Rakim Eishes Ochiv Min Ha'av. We're dealing with sources that the din of Yibum is only when you are dealing with brothers that have a common father. So the first source for that was Yachdov, brothers from a common father, because they are able to inherit one from the other. Rabba Omar, Rabba is a second source for this point. Achin min Rav Yolif Achfo Achfo Mibdei Yankiv, through a word comparison. And Rashi quotes that. We had so far the one pasuk Ki Yeshvu Achim, and in the case of the sons of the patriarch Jacob, the Bnei Yankiv, the pasuk says Shneimoser Achim Bnei Avinu. So in the pasuk dealing with the brothers of Joseph, the pasuk says we're 12 brothers, the son of the same father. So brothers from father through common father, that's called brother. And in the pasuk dealing with Yibum, it speaks about brothers. So I know that the word brother means from common father, and only then do we apply the laws of Yibum, where one brother dies, leaving no children. A surviving brother, if or provided he is a brother from a common father, then the mitzvah of Yibum applies. So we'll read that term again. Rabba Omar, Achim Rav Yolif, the concept of brothers from common father for mitzvahs Yibum is learned, is derived Achva achva min b'yankiv. Ma lahalon min avlo min aim. Just like over there, the 12 tribes, they were all sons of Jacob. They had different mothers. There were four matriarchs, or I should say four mothers. Not the matriarchs, that's already a reference to Sarah and Rivka as well, but there was Leah and Rachel, Bilhah and Zilpah, four mothers that accounted for the 12 sons of Yankiv Avinu. So they were brothers, but only through a common father, not through common mothers. Afkan, so too here in the context of Yibum, Minoav, Velo, Minoheim. Since the Pasuk uses the word Achim by Yibum, we understand it. It's like the word Achim by the Bnei Yankiv, where it said explicitly Achim Bnei Avinu. The Gemara asks. Now, you'll notice we have a diamond, and that the marking is explained on the side under the Mivneh. Hatsa'ois chilufios. These are alternative suggestions. Alternatives to what we've said till now. So the Gemara asks, V'leilif achva achva me'arayas. Why not learn the term achva by Yibum from the term achecha that you find in the context of arayas, of forbidden relations. And the Pasuk says, Ervas eshes ochicha loy sigale. Now the word ochicha in arayas says the do not have intimacy with your brother's wife. Eshes achecha. Now the word achecha there includes brother from common mother. That if two brothers share a common mother, one brother is not allowed to marry the wife of his deceased brother, even if she happens to come from a common mother. So in the context of Arias, we see the word Achecha includes Ach Min Ho'em. So the Gemara answers, the word in the case of Arias is slightly different from the word Achim that you find by Yibum. And where do you find the exact same word that you have by Yibum? You find that exact same word, Achim, brothers, when you look at the B'nai Yankiv. Donin Achim me Achim, we derive the word Achim of Yibum from the word Achim by the B'nai Yankiv, the ain donin achim me'achecha. And I'm not going to derive the definition of ach by Yibum from the word achecha, which is slightly different. Even though it's the same root, it's slightly different. The Gemara asks, since when does it bother us in word comparisons when there's slight differences? My nafka mina, what difference does it make? Ha tana debe Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel has the following teaching. Vishav HaKain, Ubo HaKain. You have one Pasuk saying Vishav, another Pasuk saying Ubo, and we learn Zuhi Shiva, Zuhi Bia. Without getting into the background and the context of that word comparison, which is dealing with the laws of Mitzora, but we compare these two psukim, Vishav HaKain Boke, even though the words aren't the same. It's the same idea. So that you see that in making word comparisons, it's sufficient that there's some element of similarity, even if it's not the exact same letters. So, with that in mind, why then do I not learn the definition of brother from the Parsha of Arayas, from the, in other words, I want to learn the word Achim from the word Achecha when I see precedent for learning comparisons, word comparisons, even if they're not exactly the same. The Gemara says, basically, you're right that we're not insistent on exact similarity. However, that's when you don't have an alternative. Hani, meaning when is it that we say that the words don't have to be exact? Hecha deleko midi de domile. That's when you don't have anything that's more similar. Aval hecha deko midi de domile. When you have something that is more similar, like in our case, we have the word achim by Yevomis, and Achim, the same exact word, by the B'nai Yankiv. So when you have two pans, and one presents an exact comparison, so Mididomi Le Yalfinon will opt to make the comparison from that which is of an exact nature. The Gemara asks, V'leilev achva achva miloit. Now here you'll see the word achim appear in another topic, and it's a reference to a different type of relative. We have the word achim in the context of yibum, ki yeshu achim yachdov, as we mentioned already numerous times. And where else do you see the word achim? You find it from, in the case of Lot. Now Lot and Avraham Avinu, Avram was the uncle of Lot. Lot was the nephew of Avram. And how was he the nephew? Well, Avram had a brother. His brother's name was Haran. Haran had a son, Lot. So the Pasuk says, by Lot, Dechtiv ki anoshim achim anachnu. There, Lot and Avram are being referred one to the other. We are brothers. Now, they weren't brothers. It was an uncle and nephew. The result of this would be, if I'm going to learn achim, a word comparison of yibum from the case of uncle-nephew, the result would be that if one's father's brother dies, leaving a widow, the nephew would be expected to marry his uncle's wife, the widow. So is that the path to take? Is that how we should understand? Maybe that's how we should understand the mitzvah of Yibum. Nephew marrying the uncle's widow when he dies, leaving no children. The Gemara says no. Mistabro mibnei Yankiv havi lei lemelaf. It's more likely that I'm going to learn the mitzvah of Yibum ki yeshu achim from the parsha of the bnei Yankiv. Why? Mishum de mufni. Mufni means available. The word is the word achim in the context of the bnei Yankiv is an extra word. It's something that wasn't absolutely necessary to be written, and the same idea could have been conveyed anyway. So why does the Torah go out of its way to write that word? To instruct me, to clue me in to this word comparison. The Pasuk could have simply said description of the sons of Yankiv, we are 12 of your servants, the children of the same father, uksiv achim, and the word achim is used in the Pasuk, shmamino lafnuye. So even though the Pasuk could have written shneim osar avodecha and added the word achim, we learn that achim by Yibum is to be compared to achim by the sons of Jacob, and they were all brothers from a common father. V'itzterich lemichtav achim, v'itzterich lemichtav yachdov. Above, if you recall, we saw yachdov as the first of two approaches as an indicator that Yibum takes place with brothers that could inherit from one another to the exclusion of brothers from common mother. And then we saw also the achim word comparison. Here the Gemara says, in truth, I need both approaches to clarify and solidify this conclusion. And notice we have a long point marking. The Gemara continues. De'i kosav rachmona achim. Had the Torah written just the word achim without yachdov, havamina leilef achvo achvo milot, I would have thought to learn a word comparison between Yibum and Loit, making Yibum a nephew-uncle type deal. Skipping the parentheses momentarily, you see the brackets, we'll just skip them momentarily. Therefore, kosav rachmono yachdov, hamiyuchodim benachlo, the type of brother that would inherit one from the other. And that's to the exclusion of an uncle-nephew relationship, where the closeness in terms of laws of inheritance are not the same, don't apply as they would with regard to two brothers. Let's go over the bracketed section. We said that had the Torah written just Achim without Yachdov, I would have thought to learn Achva Achva from Lot. The Chitema Lo Mufni, you might say, well, I wouldn't have learned from Lot because the word Achim is not available in the case of Lot. Lie, in truth, Afnuye Mufni, it really is available. Midahavile Lemichtav Reim, the Pasuk could have said, Kianoshim Reim Anachnu, we are friends, we are close in that sense, Avram and Lot. But Uksiv Achim, and it shows the word Achim instead. Shma Minol Afnuye, it shows us that the Torah had a particular agenda, it made it available, so that the word Achim, in the case of Lot, really could have been, potentially could have been, the source of defining Achim in the case of Yibum. Therefore, it's necessary. Kosav Rachmona Yachdov, Hamilchad ben Achla. By writing Yachdov, that clues me into their potential inheritance relationship, to the exclusion of uncle-nephew. V'i Kosav Rachmona Yachdov, Have Amino Demiachti the Abba Ubiima. Had the Torah written just Yachtov without the word Achim, I would have thought that they are miyuchad, they have to be unique in that they have both parents in common. That only if two brothers have both parents in common would there be Yibum. Therefore, by adding the word Achim, I learned that it's sufficient that they are common, they're brothers to a common father, even if they have different mothers. The Gemara asks on this last Havamina, notice we dashed underlined the word Havamina in order to clue you in and to enable you to focus on what this question is. You just said that we would have had a Havamina that they have to be brothers from common parents, both parents the same. This idea that they'd have to have both parents in common, where do you get that idea from? Yibum benachlo tolo rachmona. The din of Yibum is connected to the rules concerning inheritance. V'nachlo mino av lo mino aim hi. And the laws of inheritance pertain to a... a patriarchal line and not matriarchal. Nachla is dependent on father. The son inherits from father down the line, using the father as the basis of the laws of inheritance. So why would you say that mother, common mother, would figure in this to begin with? And in fact, as far as the laws of inheritance are concerned, brothers that are half-brothers but have a common father, even if they have different mothers, they all inherit equally in their father's estate. The presence of mother is irrelevant. Itzterich. No, I still need... I need Achim. Salkadait Chamina. Without that word... And if I would have had just the word Yachdov, I would have thought, Hoyel v'chidushu, since this topic of Yibum is something novel, it in fact is contradictory to all the laws of forbidden marriages. The komishteri erva gabe, we are allowing, only because there were no children from his brother's marriage, only because of that we are allowing a surviving brother to marry his sister-in-law, to marry his brother's widow. If there were children, she would be strictly off-limits. So that you have an example of one of the many different forbidden women being allowed. Well, Amor, that would have led me to think that we're not going to be so quick to allow this kind of marriage, a Yibum marriage, until the brothers are full brothers from mother and father. Sricha, therefore it's necessary to have the word Achim. Just to review this last point, there was ground for thinking that they would have to be full brothers with common mother and father. And that's why the Torah had to use the word Achim as well to to exclude that conclusion. As you can see, there's a slash mark indicating that that which follows is a new trend of thought. And on the side, we have a topic heading, and no say clearly a general topic heading, indicating that this the general discussion lasts till Daf Yud Ches Amud Beis, so relatively speaking, it's quite a long discussion. Machlokes Amoraim I Amrinon Yesh Zika. We're going to see an Amoraic controversy as to whether we acknowledge a legal connection. I say legal to the exclusion of common parlance, where people say, they're connected, people from the same family, so they're connected. And we're not talking in those terms, we're talking in terms of, in a legal sense, Zika. Zika has to do with a connection, we can call it a quasi-marital status. So do we say that the sister-in-law, in other words, you have two brothers, and one is married to a woman, that there is some type of bond, Zika. I hope that we can use the term Zika henceforth without resorting to attempted translations, because Zika simply represents this legal status. Is it a legal reality or not? And I think that still it sounds a bit abstract, but I think that through going through the Gemara's discussion surrounding the issue, it will take on a more concrete meaning. As we notice, there are markings in the Gemara. We have a house marking, a bow tie marking. On the side, we have a nosei mivneh heading. The house represents shnei deos b'sheimeres yavam shemesa. Two opinions regarding a woman who was waiting for Yibum, but she died before the surviving brother, her husband's brother, married her. So she was a shomeres yavam. She was waiting. She was on the on-deck circle. She was in the balance. She was waiting in the wings for Yibum, but died. Ha'im ha-yavam mutu bi'imo. Is the yavam, the surviving brother, can he marry her mother? If it helps, for maybe for some it's confusing, but we're talking about a man marrying his sister-in-law's mother. Rabbi Rav Huna Omar Rav is matir. Rabbi Huda asus. It's going to be of some note that when we learn the Gemara, you'll see Rav Yehuda asring, and we don't see from whom Rav Yehuda got that tradition. That will be something that will come up in discussion later. But in the meantime, you see two opinions regarding the permission, the permissibility of a man marrying his sister-in-law's mother. And we'll be speaking about a case where she is on the sister-in-law herself is in the on-deck circle, meaning she is waiting for Yibum. Now, we should point out, of course, if, let us just say, the brother, the surviving brother, instead of doing Yibum, he marries her mother, so he won't be able to do Yibum with the widow anymore, because that would be his wife's daughter, and that's strictly forbidden as per the Parsha of Arayas. The bow tie shape is simply used to lahavlit hamachlokas, to accentuate the machlokas, so one can see easily the difference. So even before learning the Gemara, if you just look at the try to find the bow ties. The first bow tie, Kosovar, Yesh Zika. The next bow tie, four lines from the bottom, Kosovar, we see, let me correct myself. The first bow tie, Kosovar, Ein Zika. And the second bow tie, four lines from the bottom, Kosovar, Yesh Zika. So you can see immediately that Rav Huna takes one approach, and later there's a house with Rav Yehuda highlighted. He holds to the contrary. there will triangles will appear, and they are explained as she'elois, questions. Loma Rav Huna lo signein halacha sheloi b'loshen acher. Why didn't Rav Huna author his rule in a different fashion? And we'll see that in the Gemara. Omar Rav Huna. Omar Rav. Here Rav Huna quotes Rav, Shemeres Yavam Shemesa. Now Shemeres Yavam is once again, we have Reuven and Shimon. By this point in the Masichta, my firm hope is that diagram making can be done, certainly for the simple diagrams, you can do that already in your head. So we're not cluttering the page with diagrams for every time a relationship comes up. If it is confusing, by all means, we encourage you to make your own diagrams as we go along. Shemeres Yavam Shemesa, so we imagine Reuven and Shimon. Reuven died, leaving a widow for Shimon to marry. Before he marries her, she's Shomeres Yavam, she's waiting for the Yavam. However, Reuven's widow doesn't make it into Yavam because she dies. Rav Huna says, Mutar Be'imo. Shimon is allowed to marry her mother. Maybe we should point out before we go on, and Rashi does make a point of this, in general, a man who's married to a woman, so the woman's mother, that's the man's mother-in-law, she is a forbidden relationship. That prohibition extends even after one's wife dies. If, unfortunately, a person loses his wife and her mother outlives her daughter, the man cannot marry his mother-in-law, his deceased wife's mother. So in a standard husband-wife relationship, even when one's wife dies and the mother-in-law still is alive, the son-in-law cannot marry her. In this case, the surviving brother remained alive after his sister-in-law died. Rav Huna says she never became his wife. Reuven died, leaving a widow, and Shimon, his brother, survived. The widow died. Shimon can marry her mother. What does that show us? Alma kasavar. This shows us that Rav Huna Marav holds. He is of the opinion, Ein Zika. There is no bond. So that Reuven never bonded Shimon never bonded with Reuven's widow. As a result, we don't view the widow of Reuven as having been married in any way, shape, or form to Shimon. And therefore, since there's no, until Shimon would do actual Yibum, or we'll see some other possibilities, but in the absence of any action, by the simple death of Reuven, leaving a widow, no bond is formed between Shimon and Reuven's widow. Therefore, Shimon is free to marry her mother, the deceased sister-in-law's mother. The triangles, as we said before, introduce questions on why Rav Huna phrased things like he did. V'leima, why doesn't Rav Huna simply say halacha kedivrei ha'omer ein zika? It's a simple type of legal ruling that the halacha follows the opinion that says there is no bond between surviving brother and widow. So why didn't Rav Huna phrase it that way? Answer: I have omar hochi. Have amino, had Rav Huna said halacha kedivrei omer ein zika, I would have thought hani mili betray. When is it that there is no zika? That is when there are two surviving brothers. Reuven died, leaving two brothers, Shimon and Levi. It's not clear who is the designated yavam. So then, under those circumstances, we can say, ein zika, there's no bond. Aval b'chad, yesh zika. If there's only one surviving brother, and it's very clear who the yavam is. So under those circumstances, I would have thought, had Rav Huna phrased his halacha that the halacha follows the one who says Ein Zika, but in this case where there's only one surviving brother, I would have thought there is a bond. Therefore, Rav Huna had to spell out the case as he did, and not simply rely on my figuring things out by saying the halacha gidivrei Ein Zika. Valema, alternative possibility, why doesn't he say halacha kedivrei ha'omer ein zika afilu b'chad? Why didn't he simply say that the halacha follows the opinion that says there is no zika even if only one brother survives? It should be pointed out that the issue of zika and its existence based on number of surviving brothers is a subject of discussion later in the Masechta. So, couldn't Rav Huna have said that the halacha follows that opinion, that there's no zika even if there remains only one brother and it's clear that he's the avam, but still ein zika? E Omar Hochi, had Rav Huna said it like that, have amino afilu mechayim. I would have thought that even when the Yavama, when the widow is still alive, that it would be mutter for Shimon to skip over the Yibum and marry her mother. Komash Malon Lachar Misa. Therefore, Rav Huna spelled out the case. He said in his original statement, if you go back to where the house marking is, Shomeres Yavam Shemesa. He specified, she, in order for the heter of marrying her mother to come to be, that's provided that the Shomeres Yavam, the widow herself, died. So let's read that line again. Had Rav Huna said, Halachit Re'emer Ha'im Zika Afilu B'chad, I would have thought that there's no bond whatsoever, even if the widow is still alive. Komash malon liachar misa in mechayim loy. If the surviving brother wants to marry her mother, that would only be true if the yavama, the widow, died. But if the widow is still alive, even though we say there's no bond, still Shimon cannot marry her mother if the widow is still alive. Why not? Mishum de'osur levatil mitzvas yivmin. We alluded to this before. It's forbidden to cancel, to put yourself in a position where you won't be able to perform the mitzvah of Yibum. So that if the widow of Reuven is alive and Shimon would opt to marry her mother, at that point he would not be able to fulfill the mitzvah of Yibum. And since one is not allowed to cancel a mitzvah, to void a mitzvah possibility, Rav Huna's din allowing Shimon to marry his brother's wife's mother, that's only if his brother's wife herself is no longer alive. Tanan. And now we will raise a question on Rav Huna's teaching. Tanan. Yevimtoi shemesa muter b'choisa. If Shimon was waiting for Yibum with Reuven's widow, but she died, so Shimon can marry her sister, Bachosa in Beimolo. The source is saying he can marry her sister, but he cannot marry her mother. That's a kasha on Rav Huna. Rav Huna allowed her mother to be married by Shimon, the surviving brother. The Gemara rejects this question. Hu hadin dafilu bi'ima. The same halacha would apply regarding her mother as well. Just like we said, if the widow of Reuven dies, Shimon can marry her sister. If the widow of Reuven dies, he can marry her mother as well. So then why did the Tanaic source feature her sister? The Aidi de Tana Reisha, since the Reisha of that Tanaic source, the first part of the source, focused on sister in speaking as follows, Ishtoi Shemesa Mutar Bachosa, one's wife, one's regular wife who dies, you're allowed to marry her sister. And when it comes to wife, then there is a limitation. B'chose'in aval b'ima lo. When one's wife dies, you are entitled to marry her sister, but not her mother. That's one's mother-in-law. Dehavya lo isura doraisa. That's a Torah level prohibition, marrying one's mother-in-law. Therefore, tona nami seifa mutar b'achos. So therefore, when dealing with the avama that died, the seifa continued the same trend of thought with the focus on sister, but in the seifa case, it's not to the exclusion of her mother. Hence, we are able to preserve Rav Huna's teaching. V'Rav Yehuda Omar, Rav Yehuda, you'll see, disagrees. Shemeres Yavam Shemesa Osur Be'ima. The Shemeres Yavam, the widow of Reuven that dies, Shimon, the surviving brother, is not allowed. Osur Be'ima. He cannot marry her mother. Alma Kosovar, it shows us that Rav Yehuda is of the opinion, Yesh Zika, that upon Reuven's death, or at least at that point, a bond is formed between Reuven and between Shimon and the widow. If a bond is formed, so it's, we'll say it's like it's a quasi husband wife relationship, he cannot marry her mother. Her mother for Shimon would be a quasi mother-in-law. Question, again, a language question. V'leimo, why doesn't Rav Yehuda say halacha kedivrei Omer yesh zika? So why not say it in a straightforward fashion that the halacha follows the opinion that says there is a bond, a legal bond between the Yavam and Yavama, even before Yibum. A new marking is going to appear, so on the side under the Mivneh heading, you notice, Tshuvos lomer Rav Yehuda Omer dvorav kamo shamar. Responses to this particular question. Why did he say it the way he did? So the Gemara answers, I have Omar Hochi, had Rav Yehuda said, Halacha kedivrei Omer yesh zika, have amino hanimili b'chad. I would have thought, when is there a bond? That's only if there's only one surviving brother. Abel betray, ein zika. But I would have thought that if two brothers survived, so there is no zika. The Gemara asks, how could you say that? V'haki pliki, but when the machlokas arises concerning the issue of zika or not, betray pliki. It actually appears in the case of where Reuven dies, leaving two brothers. And the man d'omer that says, yesh zika, that there is a bond, he said so initially. He said so even when there are two brothers. So I wouldn't have thought that by saying halacha kedivrei Omer yesh zika, that would be limited to the case where there's only one surviving brother. Ela i omar hochi. Rather, the objection to the suggestion of why not say halacha kedivrei Omer yesh zika, had he said it that way, we continue at the top of Yud Ches Amud Aleph, have amino. I would have thought that the concept of Zika applies only when she is alive. But when the Yavama, when the widow of Reuven dies, then the bond is cancelled, is obliterated. So what Rav Yehuda is telling me is that a bond with Bichdi means without any action, without anything, just with her death, that the bond is not undone. And therefore, as Rav Yehuda said, the Shemeres Yavam Shemesa, even when the widow dies, the Yavam Shimon, the surviving brother, cannot marry her mother because of the bond that had been formed. And it's not obliterated upon the widow's death. Leimo Misayele. Can we say that the following is a support to, and now this Gemara will be kind of familiar because it's almost a repeat of sources that we saw at the on the previous Omer Daf Yud Zayim Beis. So can we say the following supports Rav Yehuda? Yevimtel Shemesa Mutar Bachosa. When the widow of Reuven dies, one is allowed to marry her sister. Bachosa in Beima Lo. But her sister, yes, but mother, no. Her mother, no. That's what Rav Yehuda said. The Gemara says, no, no proof, and this is a rejection. Notice it lasts a couple of lines. Hu hadin dafilu bi'ima. Truth is that once the Yavama dies, as far as the Tanaic source is concerned, the brother Shimon would be allowed to marry her mother, just like he's allowed to marry her sister. The Aidi Detana Reisha, but since the Reisha, the first part of the source, focused on sisterhood, Ishto Shemesa Mutar Bachosa, when one's wife dies, a person can marry his wife's sister. And there we say Dafka Bachosa, there in the case of husband-wife, the heter, the permission, is limited to the wife's sister. Avo bi'imo lo, dehavio lo yisuda raisa. But to marry his wife's mother, namely his mother-in-law in a husband-wife case, she is prohibited on a Torah level, deraisa level. So as a result of the Reisha focusing on sister, Tana Nami Seifa Mutur Bachosa, the Seifa also focuses on sister, on the heter for the surviving brother to marry the deceased widow's sister, but not to the exclusion of a heter to marry her mother as well. So that if you would leave things like that, we don't see a support to Rav Yudah's claim that her mother is usher. The sukkah, as we pointed out before, is a long sukkah. It continues, and unfortunately, sometimes in the context of Daf Yomi, we have to end things in the middle of a discussion. But before we conclude, let us remind you, if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.